Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Well, it's absolutely true that sexuality and disabilities are not addressed or explored enough. I'm so happy to have Dr. Mitchell Tepper, and he was a guest last year. He's back again, and Dr. Mitch Tepper reports that he dove headfirst into the field because of a diving accident years ago, breaking his neck. And since then, and I've known Mitch many years, he has become an internationally recognized sexuality educator, disability expert, and pioneer in spinal cord research and orgasm. And welcome to this program once again, Dr. Mitch. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. I can't believe it's been a year.
Yeah, it's been a little less than a year, but anyway, we have lots of things to discuss now, and I thought that we might first just review a bit your book, which is Regain That Feeling, Secrets to Sexual Self-Discovery. We'll just review that to give the listeners a little bit of foundation for your documentary, which you're doing with Dr. Mark Schoen, and he's going to be my guest in about 3 weeks. And the documentary is Making Love After Making War. So are you okay with that? We'll start with your book and some of your personal missions, and then we'll go on to the documentary that you and Mark Schoen are involved with.
Of course.
Okay. So one of the great things about your website, drmitchelltepper.com, and I have spent some time on it just recently, again, I really like the sex TV you have and the On a Roll with Bob Berkowitz, Naked New York, and there's a lot of really good information that people can just look at. It's like a YouTube thing, and they'll get a lot of information, and you're such a good guest. You're a good guest on my show, but you've been on many. Yeah, you've been doing a lot of media. Can you talk a little bit about some of the media you've done, Mitch?
Well, I'm really always grateful to have these opportunities to spread the word. I mean, so, for a lot of years, when I had the website sexualhealth.com, I was working with the ACLU fighting laws that were restrictive, that would have, restricted sexual health education online. And so, at that time, I was covered by New York Times, CNN, all different broadcast outlets. I've done TV documentaries, on disabilities, and I'm really proud of one of the documentaries I was on. I think it was with Discovery, that they included my work, my orgasm research, in a general documentary or, show about orgasm, because I believe that the work that I do with sexuality and disability has applications to everyone, and to see that kind of go over from the world of like rehabilitation and just medicine to go and educate, the whole population about, our potential for pleasure. And it's not restricted by what's happening in our genitals.
Our potential for pleasure. And that's why so many of our listeners who are able-bodied should continue to listen. And then, of course, those that have disabilities need to get this information especially. But for those that have, who are able-bodied, there's much to learn. And you talk on your website about sensate focus and tantra sexuality and energetic focused model, and it's, we're so, many people are so genitally focused, and that's what I think Masters and Johnson did a great service by coming up with the term sensate focus and getting people to pay attention to more than their genitals. And that's especially useful for people with disabilities. Can you expand on that, Mitch?
Sure. I mean, the ability to kind of touch, you know, for your interest and to, you know, be on the receiving end of touch and to focus on that is, you know, gives you the ability to kind of relearn or learn for the first time how to take in some of these sensations. You know, people these days, they understand mindfulness, and people are talking about mindful sex now and slow
yes.
sex. And these things all kind of, you know, come out of the, I mean, when we're not talking about the sensate focus, you know, strictly, but out of those type of things, out of tantric sex, you know, I say that, you know, mindfulness is like tantra medicalized for the 21st century, because if you, they come from the same roots, and the whole process of stopping, slowing down, focusing on what you're doing and connecting both with yourself and someone else is really essential to having a good intimate sexual experience. I mean, you can have an exceptional experience by yourself or with someone like you were by yourself, but, you know, for a real connected experience and something that's, you know, what you talk about, you know, love and a great, you know, juicy sex life lasting for a long time, you know, if, you know, if that's a real kind of connected, mutually beneficial experience, you know, that's the formula to keep things going.
Absolutely. And people really need to become, I often with my new couples who've lost desire, and these are able-bodied people, one of the first assignments I'll give them is at home sensate focus exercises, because a lot of folks just don't even have this notion that you know, from the top of our heads to the bottom of our feet, there are all these possibilities, and a lot of people, erotic possibilities, sensual possibilities, and a lot of people get stuck between the legs.
Yeah, it's very interesting you said from your top of your head to the bottom, so, because if you look at the brain and the cells in the brain,
yeah.
The toes, you know, are really near the genitals in your brain. And that explains why
right.
some people have an orgasm from, you know, sucking their toe. And, you know, any part of the body, you know, can you create enough pleasure, you know, if you're focused, you know,
yeah.
You know, back from either tantra or mindfulness, you know, it's your attention and your intention that you put. So, you know, if you're really open in the right context, you know, whether it's people learning after they lost feeling before below their waist that they're orgasmic from air stimulation or lip or whatever it is. But when you really practice this, you can focus on any sensation with the right attention and intention and, you know, bring that to a very pleasurable and even orgasmic experience.
How useful this is for people that have trouble reaching orgasm, men and women, mostly women. I mean, my experience is women who have trouble. And, of course, one of the essentials is to be very present, the mindfulness, right, mindful sex, to be very present and to be able to let go. And with your work with orgasm and disabilities, you must talk about that as well. I know you do from spending time on your website, drmitchelltepper.com. So can you speak a little bit about that? Just because
yeah,
you talk about that in your book, too.
Yeah, I wrote an article once on letting go of restrictive notions. mm-hmm. this is specifically, you know, for men, but we have all have notions of what sex should be, is supposed to be like, and those yeah. things keep us kind of locked in. And when we don't fit the model or we can't fit the model, then we, you know, our minds work against us. So, you know, we have to kind of, you know, learn, you know, I'm an educator at heart, learn mm-hmm. and, you know, about our bodies, about our sexual responses and our ability to respond differently. And then, you know, if we're open our minds to these different experiences, you know, that our brains will come along. I mean, there's a slide I have of a, thanks to Dr. Barry Komisarek from Rutgers, yeah. of a brain on orgasm, you know. It's actually hanging in my office. It is very, like, orange and bright yellows and other colors. And, you know, when I'm presenting, I said, this is your brain on orgasm. And what's important to know is that, you know, orgasm is, you know, brain-mediated experience, you know. So we think of
brain-mediated,
it
brain-mediated, yes.
Genitally, you know, triggered genital experience. But that genital experience goes through, you know, those sensations go up through your brain. So we can look at, you know, the brain during orgasm through masturbation or through fantasy alone and see that the same areas of orgasm light up.
Light up, yeah.
The orgasm is the bright yellow lines in between all mm-hmm. orange and hot red.
Mm-hmm.
These are through, you know, electromagnetic things, you know, EEGs on the brain.
Yeah. So, in your book, Five Secrets to Pleasure and... In your book, you have five secrets to pleasure and connectedness, and the book is Regain That Feeling, Secrets to Sexual Self-Discovery. And that is available, what, at Amazon and also on your website?
Yeah, but it'll through Amazon.com. And
okay.
I think it's in other sites, too, but...
Yeah.
And we'll get them there.
So this is a wonderful book. You share how your research on pleasure and orgasm in people with spinal cord injuries led you to identifying the importance of trust, safety, and connectedness.
Right. That's the winning triad. That's
the winning triad.
Power triangle. You know,
yeah.
What I looked at is people with spinal cord injuries. So, you know, people who've lost, a lot of people who've lost movement or sensation, you mm-hmm. know, somewhere below the neck. But what I found out, it doesn't matter where, you know, whether it's a complete or incomplete injury. But some people, after their injury, you know, learn to experience orgasm again, and some people haven't yet learned. And I looked at those who have orgasm and those who don't after spinal cord injury, and I teased out, you know, the issues. So, you know, what was going through their minds that blocked them, and whether they had an orgasm or not, I asked, you know, each person to tell me about their peak sexual experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they said,
mm-hmm.
I needed to be with somebody I trusted, you know, I needed to be with somebody I felt safe with. And in that context, there was this sense of connectedness where, you know, bodies were merging. You couldn't tell where one person, you know, began, the other person ended. And this trust, safety, and connectedness led to experiences of pleasure and sometimes orgasm for the first time. So, you know, after injury, mostly everybody I talked to had lost the ability to experience orgasm. And, you know, through this, when I talk about the process of sexual self-discovery,
yeah.
Some people come to relearn it again. And this... When you look at this, this is coming out of qualitative research at people with spinal cord injury. But if you look at this container of trust, safety, and connectedness, and you then go into looking at people who are, you know, trauma survivors, right?
Yeah.
That this, the same context helps people, you know, move on and experience pleasure again. You know, if they're in this container of trust, safety, and connectedness, you know, as soon as they feel unsafe, right, or be triggered, then, you know, we're going off in not a good direction. So it's amazing, you know, when I look at different research and I see we're all coming to the same thing, whether it's a physical injury or a psychological injury, you know, these components are important.
And sometimes, of course, it's psychological and physical, and they blend and all of that. So my experience, mainly with women who are anorgasmic, is that they need to, I mean, there's some crossovers, of course. They need to be able to trust and feel safe with their partner and connected, the winning triad, as you put it. But as I understand it, the amygdala, that's the feeling center of the brain, the fear center of the brain, needs to take a nap. That a woman, and I suppose this is true, you can tell me, this is true for men too, men and women with disabilities, but the amygdala needs to just take a nap so that the person can experience orgasm and let go, surrender. But you can't do that if you don't feel safe.
Right, surrendering to the moment. And, guys, you would be surprised how many guys, and you maybe hear it from women on the receiving end and heterosexual couples, that how many guys have difficulty, and I'm going to use the word ejaculating, not orgasm right now, because a lot of men just don't separate the two.
Yeah.
But, things as far as delayed ejaculation, and helping people to be more mindful, be more focused. Actually, it's the root of therapy for both delayed and rapid ejaculation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think guys are having, or men are having the, in general, a lot of men are not having the full, responsiveness that they could have. I asked, I'm thinking of a client recently, a coaching client, and he had some medical issues, and I asked him to tell me about his orgasm. He explained this buildup, from his toes to his waist, and I'm like, okay, I said, you're missing whole other half of your body, from your waist up. And, so we're going to teach him to kind of tap into, to use some of these techniques to tap into more higher levels of arousal, so you can experience, fuller orgasms, especially in the change of, situation that he was going through.
Dr. Mitch, you offer a 30-minute sexual health care session from your website, drmitchelltepper.com. Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, I'm using a coaching model. So I am PhD in sexuality education and ASEC, American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, certified educator and counselor. But I come from a coaching model. I don't believe people's problems are going to be solved in 40 minutes. So I like to see people over, at like a six sessions at least commitment. And, to make that commitment, I like to talk to them 30 minutes up front first and to answer whatever questions they have and see if it's a good fit, or if I need to.
Right.
And, so many people, they call and we have that conversation and they go away for a long time and they come back, maybe a year later, maybe two. But, they're just happy to have that time. And, I'm happy to do that, so.
It's very generous. Well, you're a very generous man because I refreshed my memory about you by reading your website and you had a degree in finance and you left.
Yes.
You left a lucrative career, potentially lucrative career, to go into this sexuality business, and especially the disabilities where there was so little known. I mean, you really were generous when you did that. Because you saw a need and you filled it and you're continuing to fill it. And I want our listeners to pay attention because Dr. Mitchell Tepper is a really fine man. He's a bright man. He's been in a chair for how many years now? Have you from your 30 years?
36 almost.
36 years, yeah. So you come at this. Oh, and I just while I have the I want to talk about 2001. There was a World Congress for Sexology in Paris. And Mitch, do you remember the night that a whole group of us went out on the town in Paris?
Yes.
Yeah, that was really a lot of fun.
Dinner and a show.
Yeah, we went to the Falaise de Bergère.
Yeah,
it was great. Anyway, I've known you a long time, and you're a fun guy, and you have not allowed your disability to interfere. I mean, much more so than many would have done. And you found a good woman, Cheryl. You were told after your diving accident that you had a 10% chance of conceiving a child. Well, you did, and now your son is 20 and in college, and you and Cheryl are so proud of him. I mean, you're living it, Mitch, and it's just because you're living it, you're so much more authentic.
Well, they say that, you know, most research is me-search. So I was, as you said at the beginning, you know, I was kind of forced into a situation where, you know, I broke my neck. I lost something, you know, I loved, which was, you know, the part of my sexuality. And I went and, you know, in the beginning, it was self-serving, you know. And over time, I found out, you know, I was very comfortable about this. Other people wanted to know. So I just moved in a direction where I felt there was a need. So, you know, I've learned and I've grown. I'm still, I believe, learning and growing, you know, in my sexuality. And I think I wouldn't have learned so much and developed so much if I hadn't been, you know, faced with some losses. Most people
think that's true for many people. When they have to experience loss or suffering, if they keep their eyes open, they learn and improve. And I think that's what's happened to you. You know, with losses often come some new insights. And I think that happened for you.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a whole, I guess, growing body of discussions about post-traumatic growth.
Post-traumatic growth.
Yeah.
All right. I'm making a note of that, because that's...
Oh, really? Yeah. I first heard that term in 2008 from Brigadier General Lori Sutton. She was speaking for us.
Uh-huh.
Wounded Truth Partners Supporting an Intimate Relationship Conference. And, yeah. So, it was from the Defense Under Excellence on PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So, not all trauma leads to, you know, post-traumatic stress or any type of disorder, you know, some trauma, you know, when you come through the other end, leads to growth.
So if people go to your website, and I'll put this up when I do a summary of our show, but drmitchelltepper.com. So you've got Sex TV, where you talk, you've got these great interviews that are all up there with, like, YouTube stuff, where you talk about being sexual without intercourse, and you lots of kissing, you and your wife Cheryl, lots of kissing, and then another, you talk about the need for vibrators. Lots of people need vibrators, not just the disabled, right?
Right.
And then you also talk about facilitated sex for some people. Well, expand on that a little bit. For some people with severe disabilities, they might need right. facilitated sex. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So in a situation where one person wants to be with another person, and maybe they both have, let's start with if someone's alone. If someone's alone and they don't have the arm capacity or the ability to stimulate themselves to masturbate, someone else may just facilitate that by, you know, setting them up, putting, whether it's something for a woman, a vibrator on her clitoris, or for a man, some kind of sleeve, or put a, you know, something on the TV. So they may help that person set up for sexual activities, clean up afterwards. Or if they're with someone else, you know, they may help them transfer into bed. In the context, you know, I had a couple I was working with. They both had disabilities, you know, leaving them, you know, where they couldn't get into bed together without a helper. So we talked with one of the helpers that helped them get into bed and position each other, position them so that they could be with each other. They both used power wheelchairs. They both weren't able to get in bed on their own. They weren't be able to get dressed in together. So there was a third person there helping them do all this. And once they were in bed and lying next to each other, they were able to take care of each other.
The point is, and a lot of folks who are able-bodied don't even think about this. The point is that people with disabilities still have sexual desires and needs. And they're often ignored in the general society or community. And so your work, Dr. Mitch, is so important because people do have these needs and desires, and to be able to be sexual even with some accommodations here and there is so important. I mean, oh, wow. I just, I can't imagine how difficult it must be for some people to just be, have their sexual needs ignored.
I get a lot of folks, you know, in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who've never been in a sexual relationship who, you know, finally are looking for help, you know, so they take care of, you know, everything else in their lives. I mean, so these people, they have a PhD and they manage to get through school and use, you know, technology to do everything else they needed to do. But you know, they didn't focus, or they weren't, they never had, you know, a sexual experience with another person. So I'm, you know, I'm like, okay, let's take all the skills you used to get your PhD, you know, and let's, you know, if we give you the same kind of support you got to get through school, you know, you'll see that we could, you know, help you find a partner and, you know, get fulfillment in that part of your life too.
Oh, Mitchell, you're doing such important work. Also on your website, drmitchelltepper.com, is on a roll where Bob Berkowitz, I mean, years ago I was on his real personal show quite a few times, but Bob Berkowitz was doing a show, Naked New York. When was that, more or less? Because I watched the entire interview. It was very good.
Probably before 2000, around then. I don't even know if I was a doctor back then.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's lots of good information. Yeah. I guess he did Naked New York after Real Personal on MSNBC was canceled. But he's a good interviewer.
Yeah.
And you gave him some very good answers. So all of this can be found on Mitch's website, drmitchelltepper.com. And it's really very, very good. So in your Regain That Feeling, Secrets to Sexual Self-Discovery. Well, we've already talked about a number of the things that you cover in that book, because you can imagine, well, in the book you say, this part we haven't talked about, you ask your readers to imagine a moment with a world without genitals.
Right.
And
where we learn to, you know.
Yes. So talk about that a little bit. Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, if we lived in a world without genitals and we all learned to be about sexuality, you know, from you know, our parents and from our schools and from our, you know, houses of worship, and we developed a sense of sensuality in our bodies, right, then we developed a strong foundation of sexuality, and then, boom, all of a sudden you have genitals. Now you have this extra source of pleasure, right, and this, mm-hmm. You know, wonderful part of your life. But then if you lose it again, you know, and, you know, with combat veterans, some of them who've actually lost their genitals, you still have something to fall back on. But since we don't really teach people about sexuality, right, in general, overall, and it becomes something that, you know, is just focused on, you know, in the greater media as something that's genital, when we, you know, lose function, when we lose feeling, when we lose function, when we have pain, we come to think very soonly that our sex life is over. You know, that's nothing is possible for me anymore because, well, that was it and it's gone.
And maybe this is a good segue into talking about the documentary that you and Dr. Mark Schoen, and he's going to be on this program. Let's see, I'm just looking here again. On the 6th of February, you and Mark are doing this documentary, Making Love After Making War. And
right.
Yes. So this
we're
is...
We're calling it simply Love After War now. Love After War.
Love After War. Yeah, well, and then the website is loveafterwar.org.
Yes.
And people can donate for this documentary. I did. It seems like such a worthwhile cause. Talk about what you and Mark have discovered as you have gone into making this documentary. I mean, it's got to be... I know Mark, too, for many years, just as I know you, but Mark cried after seeing some of the... Before he came on board, right? He cried.
Yes.
Yeah.
I started to work with injured veterans in 2006, and because of my expertise in sexuality and disability, and the number of people that were coming back with very serious injuries and disabilities, there was a Road to Recovery conference. It was in Orlando, Florida. And so there was 120 odd, you know, families, you know, people with disabilities, and either their partners, their husbands, their wives, if they were young and they didn't, if they weren't partnered, it was with their parents, and they could bring, you know, other people. And so I was invited to speak with some of my colleagues on the issue of sexuality. And these are men and women, some of them who had been injured for years, and no one had spoken to them about it. And they were so hungry for this information. And so year after year, we'd go back and address this group. And I was working at Morehouse School of Medicine at the time for former Surgeon General, Dr. David Satcher.
Yeah.
And he, you know, really was very supportive of my work on sexuality and disability. And we were very interested in the intersection of mental health and disability and sexual health. And this was an area in the news in 2006 about injured veterans. You know, the headline was failed intimate relationships are the leading cause of suicide. And they are still, you know, very, you know, a big part of, you know, when we look at the number of suicides that are happening every day, there's still a significant percentage, and there wasn't the attention given to it. So Dr. Satcher, you know, supported, you know, the move into looking specifically at sexuality and injured veterans. And I mentioned this conference we had in 2008 called Wounded Troops and Partners Supporting Intimate Relationships. And one of the outcomes of that is I was asked to submit a chapter for a book called Hidden Battles on Unseen Fronts. And it was the
Hidden Battles on Unseen Fronts, okay.
And it was the story of, like, American soldiers with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury and depression. And the authors sent me the stories, and there were no happy endings. So you mentioned making love after making war. When I was asked to write it, I thought, okay, I'll write a chapter called Making Love After Making War. And when I didn't see any, you know, really good stories there as far as happy endings, I wrote a chapter called The Battle for Love, which is also at drmitchelltepper.com. So I put it up there. And I said, okay, you know, we have this narrative that failed intimate relationships cause suicide. They cause intimate partner violence. They cause divorce. Mm-hmm. We don't have any positive stories. And, you know, we talked about post-traumatic growth. Through the years, I met folks who were, you know, managing to thrive in their relationships despite, you know, serious injuries. So the first, you know, couple I interviewed, you know, and I'm like, okay, I've got to begin to tell these stories. And I decided, you know, film would be the best way. And when I was getting started, I asked Mark Schoen, and Dr. Mark Schoen, who's really an icon in our field and, you know, the go-to man if you want to make a film about sexuality, if he could give me a hand. And at the time, he said, you know, I was looking at 3 years of work with no pay, and he had just finished a documentary called Trans, which, you know, just, I think this weekend, you know, raised to number two, and he'll talk about that next week, I'm sure, next time you have him on, under LGBT films. So, you know.
Yeah, his movie Trans is brilliant.
Right.
And it's helped a lot of trans folks, too.
Yeah. And
so you went to Mark, and then what?
Well, that didn't discourage me. So my son was working for me one summer, and he had a fraternity brother who he said was at Cannes Film Festival and been there before, and he was a film major. So I'm like, you got to hook me up. So, you know, me and my son Jeremy and then his fraternity brother Antonio and another one of his brothers went out to Alabama, we're in Georgia, to interview this first couple that I knew, Kat and Aaron. And we made, you know, a 15-minute standalone interview. And I showed that, you know, I saw Mark again at another conference, and I showed it to him in the lobby with a pair of headphones. And I'm sitting next to him, and he starts, crying his eyes out. I put my arm around him, you know, to see if he was okay. And then, you know, in the end, he says, okay, what can I do, you know?
Yeah, what can I do? That's Mark.
He came on as director.
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, we've interviewed five more couples. So we have six couples, very powerful stories, all different disabilities. The first couple I mentioned, Aaron, you know, had what we call a complex blast injury. He lost two legs, you know, above the knee. He, you know, had injuries to his fingers, he lost fingers, he had a brain injury, and he lost a testicle and a third, you know, so really, you know, dramatic injury. And, you know, him and Kat, his amazing partner, were, you know, fought their way back, you know, through all of this. They had fertility issues because of his genital injuries, loss and injuries, and they managed to have a beautiful child. And so their story is so compelling.
So compelling.
You know, with Mark's help, we went out and just, you know, he's making sure that this film that we capture and these stories we capture are going to be done, you know, well. So when it wants to be, you know, put out there on a major, you know, distribution channel, whether it's HBO or Netflix, you know, PBS, wherever it may end up, you know, Mark has the documentary experience, you know, and other things there out there. So, you know, he's making sure that this stuff, you know, is the best quality and will get out there, you know, as director. So it's been wonderful. And what we learn, you know, people, the 15 minutes is up there on loveafterwar.org. Well, a six minute clip from one interview is up there.
Yes, yes.
I've
watched
little,
it. I encourage listeners to loveafterwar.com
right,
to go and there and little, watch a little preview, right?
Right. And then there's like a 3 minute kind of trailer we did for our fundraiser that's also there.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a flavor of the different issues that people are dealing with. But you'll see, you know, when the full documentary is out there, you know, how, you know, these are a lot of the folks are, you know, military, both served. And they talk about, you know, their teamwork, you know, and how, you know, they worked as a team to get through this. They not without, you know, struggles, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about, you know, one guy with spinal cord injury, you know, with multiple gunshots and, you know, loss of feeling and movement before the level of injury. You know, Manny, who had burns over 85% of his body, who got his burns saving a fellow Marine, you know, from a fire. He carried another guy through a fire. And it, him, his issue was relationships, you know. And the first question he had, you know, is, did I get burned down there? And he didn't. He said, oh, you know, with that, you know, I could survive anything. But the relationship issues were a major issue for him, and it took him 15, 16 years to get the nerve up to ask somebody out. And he finally did, and he ended up marrying her and having a child, adopting her older child. You know,
that makes me want to cry. That's such a beautiful story. So here's this guy with burns over 85% of his body.
Yeah, including his face and head, his fingers burnt off.
And then he finally asked a woman out, and they got married. And they have a baby now?
Yep.
Oh, that's so that'll be in the documentary.
Yeah, and you know, when you see it right so far, there's six couples, but they weren't all married, you know, when they got injured. So when I'm thinking about Tyler and Crystal, Tyler, you know, was a young man when he got shot, and Manny was, you know, early 20s when he got burned, you know, so they managed to find that. Another couple were kind of living together, and then getting married and having a child. But that couple, both of them are in, well, they're in the documentary, but both of them served, you know, and Casey, 15 years, she served 10 of them, you know, overseas between Afghanistan and Iraq, and the amount of injuries this guy piled up, he's like, amazing that he could keep going back, you know, and so he has some physical injuries and some, you know, post-traumatic stress and hearing loss. But everything's invisible. So you look at this couple and you say, what's wrong with them? And, you know, all the stories are important. But you know, to Sombra and Casey, it's very important because it's all invisible. You would never know it by looking at them. And they're
all invisible.
We have, you know, over 600,000 men and women who have served just since, you know, 9/11 that are living with post-traumatic stress or a traumatic brain injury or depression, you know, anxiety issues, they're not visible, right? And so, you know, it's burns are dramatic. It's spinal cord injury. You see the chair, right? When you have like a brain injury, we have a woman who's deaf and blind in there, and her mm-hmm. partner, another guy who's just blind. You know, he was shot through
the face,
really. You know, so it went through, you know, one eye and came out the other eye, you know, the way it went through. Tim Hornick, amazing story. His wife, you know, they both served. And, you know, he talks about he went through 4 or 5, 6 years of anger and depression, which mm-hmm. seriously stressed his relationship.
Of course.
And it was not until, you know, they had a child that, you know, it kind of brought him back. So, and since the interview, they've had another child.
mm.
So, you know, some of these folks never had a chance to talk about this, you know, and so for them, it was cathartic. I remember the first time I brought them all together, we did a, like a virtual private screening for folks. I'm sure you were on the invitation list. And so we showed this 20-minute segment that we put together that we've been showing to like ASEC and other professional organizations with some of the couples there too. And they watched, you know, this part, they saw themselves for the first time. They met the other couples for the first time.
Oh, that must have been very powerful.
Powerful, powerful experience. And
yes.
They're all advocates. They all want to go spread the word, you know,
yes.
about this film and about the issue and let people know that there is, you know, love after war. And it is possible to get by physical and psychological issues and find that connectedness, you know, find that someone to love, find that, you know, reason to live, you know. So.
Oh, what a difference you're making. And I feel very privileged to be able to help you air your information. And our, you know, this program actually does go to all parts of the world, because after the live show, which is now, then it's archived and people do listen on their computers in different parts of the world.
Oh, and, great. Well, I was going to say, add then that, you know, this film is sponsored by the Film Collaborative, which is a 501c3 organization that helps, you know, films like this get done. So it allows us to accept contributions that are tax deductible. So if people care about that factor, and it allowed us to apply for grants, and, you know, we've got a $50,000, what's called a matching grant, from a donor that wishes to remain anonymous for now.
Anonymous,
so we've been raising money towards that. So when we get to our 50, we get the 50. And, you know, we're hoping, we have an organization that's looking at that now. We're hoping by next month we'll be able to close that gap and then get all the rest of the filming we need done. And, you know, God willing, it will be at least in the film festivals this year, you know.
Oh, it needs to be. Well, I know that after I made my donation, it was immediate that I got the tax information, so it could be tax deductible, so that was good. What you and Mark are doing is just so important, and you are serving a whole population, that a whole community that doesn't get enough recognition, and so bravo. Bravo. You must feel, even though it's got to be a struggle at times just to collect money and all of that, but you must feel very good about what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, if for me, you know, this is kind of like a culmination of my life work. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, showing all different types of disabilities, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. in these relationships. And I think that people without disabilities will get, like I said, a greater view of the potential of their relationships and what it takes really to be in relationships and to survive through really tough things. I've been educating health professionals, you know, my whole career, advocating for the inclusion of what I call comprehensive sexual health care in rehabilitation and physical rehabilitation, you know, for people, whether it's, you know, after spinal cord injury or after cancer or after heart attack with multiple sclerosis. So, you know, I think this is an important target is for, you know, health professionals to watch this film and they'll get an understanding of how important sexuality is to people and what the effect of loss is and that they need support to be able to move on and optimize their overall health because sexual health is really vital to overall health. So, you know, I think this is... And the potential is to reach millions, you know. My YouTube videos, my sex and paralysis videos have reached, you know, millions around the world.
Yeah.
But this will, you know, reach even more and more quickly, you know, when it hits whatever it is, you know, the distribution network. So.
Yes, and we know that being sexual is very good for our health. And somebody who's had a lot of losses can feel when they're with a partner a kind of merging and a kind of escape, especially if orgasm occurs, but even if it doesn't, just the feeling of touching and connectedness. It's mind-blowing to be sexual. And to, it can be transformative, don't you think, for people that...
Yes.
Yes. And so talk, yes.
Have, you know,
expand on that, because I think transformative, yes.
Right. And I think, you know, everyone wants somebody, you know, to love them. And, you know, your sister could love you, you know, and your mother could love you. But
right.
It's not the same as having the love of a reciprocated love relationship that's a sexual relationship. There's something special about it that's life-affirming, you know, and sometimes we're not so wonderful to the people closest to us, you know, because we feel safe and we can let out our anger that we don't let out in other places. And it's, you know, helping people, you know, through that process. But, you know... This, you know, we say the documentary saves lives because it saves love, and literally, and we
oh,
know
I love that documentary.
Over,
your documentary saves lives
saves
because it saves lives. Love,
right? We know people are, you know, killed themselves. We know people, you know, like Victor Fromm said, he got through the, you know, concentration camp because he, you know, sensed the love of his wife. You know, all this time, so love can keep us going. And when we lose it, it can make us give up, you know. And so I do a lot of work about that kind of love, too, because, you know, we don't want to feel like, oh, if I lost my love, I can't go on. But that's how strong the emotion is. And that emotion affects our health, you know. And so if we have a positive emotion and positive feelings around love, it's going to help our overall mental and physical health.
And you've been married to your wife for 30-plus years, right?
Right. We're going on 32 years this year.
And she's in some of the YouTube-type videos on your website. Cheryl
is
lovely.
In the early ones, she's not so comfortable going out there like I am.
There
was a great documentary that we were in. And, yeah, a couple of those, I coerced her, you know, gently. to be on film, but they're wonderful for us to have them and look back at those conversations and look at our son when he's little and, you know, to be able
and
to share like
so
that.
You're so proud, you and Cheryl, so proud of your son, Jeremy, who's now, what is he, 20 and in college?
He's 21 and he switched from being in computer science to a film major. So.
Oh, wow. He should be talking to Mark Schoen, too.
I don't think I had anything to do with him switching to film, but I like that now that he has, we have so much more to talk about, you know, with developing the documentary and doing other things. So
uh-huh.
He actually, you know, when you see that little 3-minute video he shot, he shot the stuff of me, he shot some of the stuff of the first couple, you know, Kat and Aaron. So his fingerprints are on this, too.
Oh, that's wonderful. You and Cheryl are so proud of your son. And you beat the 10% odds that you were told way back after your diving accident.
Right.
You could manage to conceive a child. And you, this is such an uplifting story, Mitch.
Thank you.
So happy for you and all that you're doing. It's just great. So I want people to go to, the best place to donate, well, they could do it on drmitchelltepper.com, but they can do it better for donating, loveafterwar.org.
Yes. Yeah, that's where they should go to directly. Love After War. Just spelt it out. LoveAfterWar. You go there and click on any donate button, and it will take you over to the website where you could give now. So.
Well, I did it, and I'm not always, you know, up to speed on high-tech stuff, but it was really easy to do it. And I did it with such love in my heart because I so believe in what you and Mark are doing. And, you know, I've had a connection with both of you for years now, but what you're doing is so important. And, you know, well, here's the music. So we want to help our vets rediscover a life filled with passion, purpose, and pleasure. So go ahead and donate. Thank you, Mitch, for the show.
Thank you for this opportunity to reach your audience.
We'll be in touch some more. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Telefonerai probabilmente a me tuo schiavo d'amore, ti divertirai, che traguardi vuoi farmi trovare?
Mai col piedi, tap tap tap, mai col piedi, tap tap tap. Happy feet, da da happy feet, da da happy feet.
Passo in fiamme ti può andare, ne discuterai con qualcuno che ne sa parlare.